And swoop.
This episode of Peanuts Gallery is brought to you by Grey Glop Brand Gruel. Grey Glop Brand Gruel, served by fictional summer camps since whenever. It sticks to your ribs as it sucks out your soul. Also brought to you by Linus's Electrolyte Solution. Don't ask where he got it. He just made it himself.
Once I have written a theme song, it will go here.
This is Peanuts Gallery. I'm Molly Lewis.
And I'm Josh A. Kagan.
And we are recording in person on the Joko Cruise.
You want to say live.
There's no audience. But we do have a guest for this episode, Nicole Deaker.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for having me on the podcast.
Thanks for being here.
Nicole, who is at Hello the Future on Twitter, is a freelance writer.
Freelance writer.
I am a cool ranch writer.
You're a very cool ranch.
She's the coolest ranch.
You're the cool ranchest person I know.
Nicole Deaker is a glass of buttermilk and spices. And you can find her writing.
Just ask your server.
This is going to be an editing nightmare for you, Molly. Who writes for The Billfold, Popular Science, Penny Saver.
Penny Hoarder.
Penny Haver.
Close enough.
And Penny Marshall. And she's terrific. And she's real smart. And we realized that we're all stuck on this boat for a week. And in a way, it's like adult summer camp.
In very many ways, it's like adult summer camp.
Except for we all get our own bathrooms, and we don't have to eat gray slop.
We don't have to sleep in tents.
We could choose to eat gray slop.
That's true. There are a lot of slop choices on the boat. So we thought that she would be a perfect addition to talk about today's episode, the last episode of the 1960s.
Oh,
September 27th, 1969's It Was a Short Summer, Charlie Brown. And there's no trivia about this episode.
Not really,
it's just
no.
Another one that they kind of pooped out. And there was a long gap between this one and the last one, the completely execrable He's Your Dog, Charlie Brown. And I have to assume, which came out in February of 1968, and I have to assume that the length of time it took between specials was because they were working on the first movie, A Boy Named Charlie Brown. So this was probably something they just sort of did in their spare time. And it kind of shows. Molly, you did not care for this episode one little bit.
No, but I feel we should disclose. We thought that It Was a Short Summer would be a good choice to do on the Joko Cruise, because Joko Cruise is basically summer camp, but in the middle of the ocean. So I have not seen He's Your Dog, Charlie Brown yet as we are recording this, but that episode will be released prior to this one. So
it's a paradox, Charlie Brown.
I know. a temporal shift.
I did watch He's Your Dog, Charlie Brown, and it is...
You have nothing nice to say about
it. Just fucking god-awful. but we'll get to that...
As people listen to it, this will just be a rehashing.
Yes, exactly. We'll get to that next time when we record it before later.
Right.
Yes.
this podcast brought to you by Stephen Moffat.
But I did watch He's Your Dog, Charlie Brown, and it is terrible. And so comparatively, Short Summer, I thought, was pretty good. But again, that's
beautifully blandished.
They blandished the heck out of it. It's pastoral. There are butterflies. There are children frolicking. There's the fall of the patriarchy.
Yeah.
There's a lot to get to in this episode.
It's true.
But Nicole, opening thoughts on the episode.
Well, I've been an avid listener of the Peanuts Gallery podcast.
Oh, and you're the one.
Of course. No, and I was familiar with the three prior episodes that you all have released. This one, I had no idea existed.
No, it didn't make it to DVD until like the late 2000s.
Which is probably why I never watched it as a child on the three channels we got in rural Missouri. I understand why this faded into obscurity.
Yeah, it is it's along with like Charlie Brown All-Stars and any non-holiday episode one. A bunch of things happen and then it's over.
Yeah, but I was familiar with Charlie Brown All-Stars, and I'm not sure why I didn't remember having seen it until I heard the podcast. I'm like, oh, no, yeah, I remember. They turned the blanket into a sweatshirt, and it's weird.
That's the whole episode. Charlie Brown All-Stars has been shown in our lifetime on television. They would pair it with Easter Beagle.
Oh, that makes sense.
For a springtime theme type thing. So this one was completely new to you. I have almost no memory of it, although I certainly remember a lot of the comic strips they mined it from.
Yeah.
There are always camp arcs, the electrolyte solution arc. We'll get to all of that. But again, Nicole, so seeing this fresh, what did you think? Did you enjoy it?
I did enjoy it. I had also consumed several electrolyte-filled adult beverages before I enjoyed it.
That definitely helps.
But it was not a painful experience to watch. It was enjoyable.
No, I thought it was cute and fine.
Yeah. There's the matriarchy and there's the music. And those are all sort of points in its favor.
It's peppy. All the boys wear those camp hats. Don't know, maybe Ben would be able to explain what those actually are, but it is canonical in the Schultz universe that when boys go to camp, they wear like little sailor hats.
Yeah, like the little paper hats you get from In-N-Out Burger, sort of that shape.
Yes.
That's my favorite reference.
That's it. That basically the summer camp just trains you for a life of, just working in fast food places, just being miserable. And if we can go off the episode for just a second, I think we can all agree, if we had to go through it, that summer camp is miserable.
It really...
In theory, I've never gone myself.
I was curious. It was one of the things I was, if you hadn't asked, I would have asked. I mean, I've been to summer camp 3 times. And I think I enjoyed every single time. There were 3 very different camps. I did church camp, Girl Scout camp, and fine arts camp.
Let me guess which one you enjoyed the most.
Well, yes.
Church camp.
Did you have to wrestle a dog at any of these camps? Wrist wrestling.
I went to High Meadow Day Camp as an elementary school kid, and that was dreadful because it was basically just gym. Like, it was just gym class, a summer of gym class, and me and my boyish figure did not cotton to that. Oh, and then we had music classes where a kid just made us listen to The Who's Tommy.
That sounds okay.
I mean, but
not
it's
ideal.
Still real weird.
Yeah.
Like, to just imagine, a 15-year-old, Hesher kid explaining to a bunch of 8-year-olds, this is where Tommy catches his mom doing it with, another guy, and then he goes blind and deaf and dumb. But he's great at pinball. Now let's listen to this song.
Right.
It's weird. We didn't really... Oh, and then we had to sing the theme to The Greatest American Hero.
Well, it seems like the thing that makes these camp experiences crappy is counselors deciding what you have to do. And the weird thing about this Charlie Brown camp is there are seemingly no counselors. There are just very tall children.
There's one. We see if this is... there are a couple firsts in this episode. And one of them is the first non-child.
I think it's a taller child. But he has a gun, therefore.
Yes, he has a starter pistol, and he is the only authority figure at this camp, nameless camp. And he's tall, and that's it. Mm-hmm. But that is a first person who seems to be over the age of 8 in this universe.
Yeah.
But they don't seem to wield any real authority.
No, Lucy seems to, as always, seems to hold all the power.
So, our pre-credit sequence, makes us think that this is going to be an episode about Sally not wanting to go to kindergarten.
Right.
And she is, she's adamant. She will not go until Charlie Brown tells her that, their mom bought her a new lunchbox. I could relate to that. There are just days that I did not want to go to school, and maybe there would just be one thing, oh, my favorite shirt's clean. Okay, I guess I'll go. I feel like that's carried through to this day. There are just some days that you don't want to get out of bed, and then you're like, oh, there's a new episode of Empire tonight.
Yeah. Might as well move to the next room in my house.
Yes, exactly. Charlie Brown and Sally go back and forth for what seems like hours about this, walking to school. She finally relents. She'll go, but she won't learn Latin, which I can only assume in 1969 killed.
Did they teach Latin in kindergarten? I know they did at some point, but not to children that small.
I always thought that that was more of a thing they taught in like a churchy setting, because so much of stuff was in Latin. Nicole, you went to church camp. Did you have to learn Latin?
No, but we did have to perform a recreation of the Stone Soup story with Wizard of Oz characters.
What?
In Latin?
No.
Oh, that's too much. That'd be too much.
Plain Midwestern English.
Okay. Yeah. That's the most bonkers thing I've ever heard.
That is.
Of course.
That really does beat our camp swing choir having to sing the Greatest American Hero theme.
No, yes, for sure. Yeah.
Which camp was that at?
It was called Camp Joe Ota. No one has ever heard of it.
No.
It still exists.
And was this church camp, fine arts camp, or?
This was church camp. Fine arts camp, we wrote our own musical. And
I'm going to make
different.
Camp Joe Ota the only tag on this podcast. Yeah, like little search keywords. Yeah. Someone's going to find it and go, yeah, represent.
Represent for sure.
But I have to assume that, and maybe one of our fair listeners can communicate this to us. I have to assume that by 69, Latin was being in its death throes as a dead language, and kids were being forced to learn it just 'cause.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think that they just wanted... It seems like at every turn, they gave characters in this episode something to yell about, like, I'll go to preschool, but I won't like it. And they just somebody on the writing team went, well, what makes me grumpy about school? I don't know, learning Latin.
Right, sure. Because all of these guys who wrote these episodes went to school in 1938.
Right.
Synopsis. Children go to summer camp. The boys are terrible at everything, and the girls are great at everything. Also... A dog pretends to drive a bus. Synopsis. Also wrist wrestling. Yeah, so the episode just sort of wanders around in place for a good 5 minutes before it actually starts. Lucy makes sure that Linus's nails are clean, and they are, thanks to toothpaste, which is just, again, taken... That's just four panels of the comic. Everybody meets up on a street corner, Linus and Lucy and Sally and Charlie Brown. Everybody says hi to each other for 45 minutes.
I'm going
to
drop that clip in right here.
Hi, Charlie Brown. Hi, Sally.
Hi, Charlie Brown. Hi, Sally.
Hi, Lucy.
Hi, Linus.
Hi, hello. Hello.
Hi, Lucy.
Hi, Charlie
Sally.
Brown.
Hi, Charlie
hi Sidewalk.
Hi, Sidewalk.
Lucy does her best Wile E. Coyote impression, Sally, rather, does her best Wile E. Coyote impression and jumps 42 feet in the air.
Is that from the strip?
Probably.
Okay.
Yeah, just nothing. We're really led to believe that this is all going to be about Sally not wanting to go to kindergarten. And in fact, it isn't.
Hard left turn.
Yeah. This is all a very, very long setup for what is a flashback-based episode. We throw to Charlie Brown and Linus are caught playing hangman in class.
But that is not how you play hangman, by the way.
By just saying letters back and forth to each other?
Right. Are they both... Do they both have words and little hang doodles? Or, you know, because one of them should be marking the letters and the other one should be suggesting the letters.
Are they playing two simultaneous games of hangman?
Two simultaneous games of hangman.
Is that even possible?
And is that like
anything's possible.
Are you, like, racing to the bottom? Like, how do you... Like, oh, well, you lost with that K that you whispered at me. Because you can't even see the word.
No.
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 So they're just... It's just 5 minutes of two children whispering letters back and forth to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And they are caught because they are terrible at everything. That's one of the themes of this episode, is that the boys are terrible at literally everything.
Yeah.
And, they're called up in front of the class and the teacher womps at them. And then she's like, oh, shouldn't you be working? And then Linus is like, you haven't given us any assignments. And Charlie Brown's very sore about that.
But understandably.
Understandably so. But then the question becomes, what had they been doing up until that point?
Yeah.
Like, what time of day was it? Had they all just been staring into space?
Mm-hmm.
The teacher just wistfully looking out the window, dreaming of a time that she had arms and legs.
I mean, it makes you wonder also why Sally did not have her lunchbox on the first day of school. What is Sally and Charlie Brown's mother up to that she did not provide this? You know, and everyone gets busy. But traditionally, the first day of the school is when you get your lunchbox, your backpack, your clothes, your things. So school's been going on, and none of the adults have their anything together.
No, because I think...
Is this the first day of school or not?
It isn't. They said it is the second.
Oh, okay.
Because they were like, hey, Sally, let's go to kindergarten. And she goes, no, I went yesterday.
Oh, good point.
So it's the second day of school, and she's got a brand new shiny lunchbox.
The exciting, dramatic second day of school.
Although maybe, because the new lunchbox was such a, like, well, if she went to all the time and expense and rolled her meat lump body to the store to get me this, I suppose I'd better go. So maybe, like, that's how her mom, well, it's kindergarten. We don't know. Maybe that's how she is incentivized to go to school every day. Like, I got you this new pencil, or pencil, like...
But it doesn't matter because Sally threw it all up in the air and ran away.
Absolutely. She jumped 40 feet in the air and then jumped that way.
Flew. She's currently orbiting Earth.
She had no more lines for the rest of the episode.
Yeah, gone. Gonzo. And so the once the teacher is like, oh, right, I have to teach children something, I guess. She assigns a 500-word essay on what I did with my summer vacation. And then we slam into the flashback. Nope, absolutely not. There's still... they all go, oh, that sucks. And then they wander past a bulletin board that has the title of the episode on it. Mm-hmm. And that is our credit sequence. And especially after You're in Love, Charlie Brown, which was like really nice and flashy and Peter Maxey. This is just sort of like... And it's the same in He's Your Dog, Charlie Brown, too. It's just sort of like, here's the title. All right, let's keep this going.
Can we talk about the reality in which there is a school that these children attend, and on the second day of school, there's a giant poster in the hallway that says, it was a short summer, Charlie Brown. What kind of omen is that?
Like, the world truly is out to get Charlie Brown.
Yeah.
It's just filled with propaganda.
Your life is whizzing by you, and one day you will be in the grave, frittering away time.
Written on the side of the men's room or the boys' room. So, they are let out of school because their school day is this. Hangman, an assignment, and then the end of the day.
Yep.
They're all walking home. There's a little interplay with Violet, who, for the first time, I think, in any episode, is actually given a character to speak of.
Yeah.
And she is a smarty pants.
Yeah, kind of a goody two shoes. I know. I wrote down because Charlie Brown's like, "All right, hey, did you? When are you going to write your essay about what you did over summer?" And she's like, "I did it during study period." And Charlie Brown says, "How do you say it? Like, Violet, you drive me crazy!"
Like practically rending his garment.
Yeah,
and just screaming like. Also, like we have been in these last five episodes watching Violet taunt Charlie Brown with her smarty pantsness. Mm. But no.
No.
No. It's the law of all of these specials that any new stimuli, the immediate reaction is rage.
Right. And it seemed to me like they got notes from the network about like, well, this naturally curly hair thing killed. More people need to have catchphrases.
Right.
Test out some catchphrases.
I finished it during study. That was Violet's. That
yeah.
Not as successful. And Violet, you drive me crazy!
Yeah.
And then we have a setup for a joke, what we think is going to be the setup for a joke, where Charlie Brown is like, do you know why teachers have to go to college for 4 years?
No, Charlie Brown, why do teachers have to go to college for 4 years?
And we as the audience are like, here comes a punchline. This is great. A little setup punchline. And then Charlie Brown, practically, like, you can hear the bleeps. Like, he's just like,
well, then I'll tell you why English teachers go to college for 4 years. So they can learn how to make stupid little kids write stupid essays on what they did all stupid summer.
Just unbridled fury. Stupid teachers giving stupid assignments about stupid. Like it's like a child that has just learned a curse word and doesn't know how to use it.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and what was the word requirement on this essay that they had to write?
500.
And does that, Nicole, you work with word counts quite a bit. Is
Absolutely.
That a reasonable length for a what I did during summer? Or does that seem,
I mean, you know,
for these like second graders?
For second graders, that does seem like a lot of words.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, you know, in the content industry, 500 words would be a little short. Google Analytics would not treat it as a serious piece of writing, and they probably wouldn't rank it highly in the search results.
Oh. Well, that's a shame.
Yeah, I know.
So the SEO for these essays, garbage.
I mean, if you're writing solid five-sentence paragraphs, 500 words is, you know, 2.5 paragraphs.
Well, see, that doesn't seem like an insurmountable challenge for Charlie Brown.
No, not at all.
I don't know why he's so upset.
And yet he barely gets out 13 words and is just like, this is the worst thing
ever. I spent my summer sucking at everything and girls are the worst. No, that's 12. See, I don't know.
He does seem like he writes a lot more words than 13.
He it must have been like an early draft.
Right.
I can't expose my failures to this teacher. I must conceal them.
And then we are finally into the flashback. And it's the last day of school. And the boys are running away cheering, and they're basically just like, we're gonna fuck off all summer! Linus is very excited about watching TV and reading comic books, which I think especially for this cruise, that sounds like a great way to kill the summer.
Yeah.
I think most people would agree.
Yeah, most people killed this cruise that way.
Yeah, exactly. Except, and drinking. But the boys are all excited. Charlie Brown's gonna work on his pitching arm, and then has a fantasy of throwing a ball where he still, the hitter still gets a home run, even though we don't see it.
Yeah.
And like, even in his imagination, he's terrible. Schroeder said, Schroeder goes piano, piano, piano.
Yeah.
And then Pigpen walks in and is like, and I'm dirty. That's just, that's kind of the punchline.
Kind of covers everybody in dust.
Yep. Everybody coughs. And then Lucy marches in and says, guess what?
I signed everybody up for camp.
Lucy, as we have well established, seems to rule this community where the children walk as adults with an iron fist.
She's just the mayor. She's appointed herself
she's
mayor.
Basically the mayor. And we were talking about the episode beforehand. Molly, you have a theory that Lucy actually is getting kickbacks from the camp?
I think so, because she goes, hey guys, I signed you up for camp. And they go, oh no. And she's, I think she said something like, no, no take backsies or no, there's no argument about this.
Legally binding.
It's legally binding. You're going to go to jail if you don't go to this camp. And then like the smash cut to everybody with their duffel bags and their little sailor hats. And Lucy is taking role. Like, she's fully taken charge of this whole operation.
Yeah.
And I think that it's some sort of multi-level marketing scheme, maybe. Where if you sign up for camp and you sign a bunch of your friends up for camp, then you get some sort of...
But everybody, and all of the adults are like, yeah, okay, I guess. I mean, yeah, sure.
I did kind of wonder if the reason that the meat lump teacher didn't assign any stuff is just because they wheel a meat lump into place where there would be an adult, and it doesn't matter what that meat lump actually is trained in. Let's go get Mr. Hennessy. There you go.
Peppermint Patty is introduced into the mix. This is the first time that in any of these episodes that she communicates with more than just Charlie Brown or Lucy. Mm-hmm. And there is a roll call where both Patty and Peppermint Patty are standing like side by side. And Violet and Patty look confused as to Peppermint Patty's existence. Because they're like, Patty, here. Violet, here. Peppermint Patty. Patty goes, yo. Because she's the cool one.
Right.
And everybody looks at her like, oh, I guess she's a character now. All right.
Okay.
And this sets up that for the entire episode, the girls are just great at everything. And almost like Navy SEALs.
Right.
In their competence. And the boys can barely stand up straight.
The boys can't. They literally cannot get through a door.
No.
Without struggle.
And then we get a flight of fancy with Snoopy, who pretends to be a bus driver.
Shoot. Shoot for the stars, Snoopy.
Yes. Yeah, it's funny. I think back to the strip, and there were times when Snoopy was doing, like, awesome things. Like, I'm an astronaut. I'm Joe Cool. I'm the coolest guy on campus. Blah, blah, blah. But then Snoopy would also sometimes pretend to be a supermarket checkout person. Mm-hmm. And in this, he's a bus driver.
Yeah.
And it's very cool. It's a cool segment. It's the neatest looking thing in the episode.
And we actually, as we were watching it, we slowed it down to watch all the... As he's driving through this fantasy land that is just, I guess, Snoopy Town.
Yeah.
Because every creature has a Snoopy head. And just each little still is so delightful. And clearly just scribbled out like, oh, we need him to drive through something. Has that look about it.
Yes, the backgrounds in Rocky and Bullwinkle have more detail. And they all look angry because they, like, all of the dogs seem to know that they've been terribly drawn.
Yeah.
They're just like, what am I? I'm delivering milk, but my head's far too big.
This goes to print tomorrow, guys. We need you to draw a bunch of these dogs. Okay, fine. Angry dog. Angry dog.
And then dog goat and dog bird.
Dog bird. I think they're Snoop. They're Snoop goats and Snoop birds.
Yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
I like
that. I want that just printed on a scarf.
Yes, absolutely. And
one of my two like favorite visual sequences in this episode.
Yeah.
The other one we'll get to later.
The Fall of the Patriarchy.
Yes.
Yeah, we'll get to that. Yeah, I have to believe that it's because it's like 1969, maybe somebody's dropping something illicit in the blandishment department.
Yeah, probably.
It's real freaky looking.
Yeah.
But the kids, so the kids get to camp, and as Molly pointed out, the boys literally cannot walk. They cannot get into buildings. They cannot stand of their own
accord. It's amazing that they can put on their own clothes in the morning.
It really is. Maybe Snoopy has to help them. And then we get our first sort of big plot point, which Linus says did not augur well because he is the smart one. And Charlie Brown is elected the head of his bunk.
That was their first mistake.
Who elected him and why?
Well, there were several other bald children in this. Well, I assume they were from different tents.
Yeah.
There are a bunch of garbage characters from other tents that we never see. But Charlie Brown has this, like, unreasonably competitive streak. I don't know the sleepaway camp experience, and if it involves, like, let's beat the girls out of sport. Like, is that... Because it seems like Charlie Brown has manufactured the struggle for himself.
I recall much more we do it better when we do it together sort of thing than let's beat other people at things.
It seems like when you sequester a bunch of children in the forest, you want them to get along.
You want to encourage teamwork. You want to blindfold one person and have the other people guide them through an obstacle course.
Lots of trust falling. Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I have to assume that this is the difference between going to camp in the 1960s and going to camp in the 1980s.
No, absolutely.
The touchy-feely 70s sort of cured America, now they're all wusses, and you get participation trophies. I don't know.
Well, and it's worth noting that for two out of the three camps I attended, my parents came along as counselors.
Oh, you know, that changes the flavor entirely.
Oh my God, that's a nightmare.
Hey, I was young. I was small, and I was not in their bunk either, you know, so. But that, you know, it's always funny to see them getting on a bus, for example, all by themselves, and not see parents hugging and crying.
No.
No.
You get no arms.
No arms.
No arms, no legs. Just lumps.
How does one hug a meat lump even?
Well, you can hug a meat lump. How does the meat lump hug you?
Oh. Maybe it just sort of vibrates like a...
It just kind of hums.
Lump. But no, there is... I mean, I think in just the history of things based at summer camps, there's always like, we're going to take care of those jerks across the lake. There is generally a lake that separates the good guys and the bad guys.
Yeah.
But in this case, I don't know if we should even be rooting for the boys.
No, I usually don't.
No. Well, and that is canonical for you, Molly Lewis.
Hello.
But no, these are ostensibly our heroes. Charlie Brown's name is in the opening credits, in the title. And he stands up in front of the map. Like, he's fucking Patton or something, is like, this summer, we are going to participate in feats of athletical daring do, and we will show those girls what for. And we're going to have a swimming contest. And he's even like, now, make sure, go easy on them, because as we all know, boys are stronger than girls.
That was his downfall.
What is Charlie Brown basing this in?
I don't know.
Because he's terrible at everything, and Lucy hands him both parts of his butt in every single episode.
And the best players on his baseball team, whenever he has a baseball team, are Lucy and Peppermint Patty, who are in the other camp. And occasionally Snoopy, I guess.
Snoopy is technically his best player.
Yeah.
And Peppermint Patty does not necessarily play on his team.
No, I suppose that's true.
She
coaches the opposing team sometimes.
Yes, and they always win.
Yeah.
So he's basing this in absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
False bravado, perhaps? Because he knows deep down that he should not be a leader of men.
Yeah. Well, he uses the phrase, like, we're going to be the heroes. Like, heroes of what? Like, the triumph, the claiming back. Take back this trophy from the girls' camp who've had it good for too long.
That's a really interesting point, Molly. It's not like there's any history given, like, they beat us every year. Or, we've lost all the time, or blah,
they didn't
blah, blah.
Seem to anticipate they were going to camp.
No.
Surprise, camp
this
now.
This all just happened 5 minutes ago. Like, they were just walking around going, can't wait to fuck off with comic books, and now they're on a bus.
Oh, wait, here's an idea. What if it is, like, a revenge spree for Lucy signing them all up for camp?
Oh, that scans.
Yeah, they could have said that, like, with words, and it would have made sense.
Sure.
I think we're giving them too much credit.
A lot.
Yeah.
I think the governing thesis for this entire podcast is that we are putting more thought into this than they did. Do you, either of you have any good stories about being kids and boys being like, we're going to best you at this, and then you handing them both parts of their butts?
I mean, does it count if you're playing, like, chess?
Of course. Anything.
I mean, I had a best male friend. I had a best female friend, but I also had a best male friend, and he and I were the ones who liked to compete at things, you know.
Of course.
With a weird undercurrent of flirting, which was very odd because we were like 9, you know, but we knew that that was what boys and girls did, and they were supposed to compete with each other at things to see who was better. And I assume we picked this up from specials like this one.
I would say so, yeah. And like most romantic comedies.
Yes.
And that song, is that song from Annie Get Your Gun?
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. And that song from Annie Get Your Gun. Mm-hmm. So he was like, I can beat you at chess.
Yeah.
I can do it 9 times.
Yeah. And we were pretty fairly matched, you know, but occasionally I would win some things.
I had a boy in school who told me, like, with words, like, boys are better than girls. A girl has never been president, and boys can pee standing up. And I punched him in the stomach. And he left me the heck alone.
Point, counterpoint.
Yep.
I mean, we can pee standing up.
We can. We just choose not to.
Yeah. I think it's a pain in the butt to stand up.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's right. You have a nice sit.
What's, yeah. What's Look at the that? Apparatus. It's designed for sitting.
Yeah. Oh, we almost overlooked the 45-hour bed-making routine.
Oh, yeah.
Where Charlie Brown...
just to remind you that Charlie Brown sucks at everything.
Literally everything. This is, Charlie Brown always likes to give that sort of opening speech like, I'm in charge and I'm great at being in charge. And let me show you some ways I'm great at being in charge. The first thing we'll do, obviously, is we'll all learn how to make our beds.
Like military style.
Like military style.
I mean, that is what you do when you get to camp, because they give you 2 flat sheets, mm-hmm. and you're also 8 years old, and then they teach you how to make the bed. And you're like, why do I have 2 flat sheets? I still don't know why they give you 2 flat sheets, because traditionally they come in the set.
Rubber bands is expensive, I guess. Fitted sheets, not cheap.
Are they 2, like, identical flat sheets?
You know, yeah, worn out. And
not like comforter and flat sheet. Like,
No. Flat 2 flat sheets, and then you get a little blue kind of grubby blanket with, you know, with a little plastic.
Like the kind Linus carries around, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Did they make you bounce a quarter off of it?
No, and I have tried that in real life, and I couldn't get it to work. I'm not sure quarters actually bounce.
I think it speaks to the quality of the blankets they're working with, if you can bounce a quarter off of.
And the tightness, because that's what they're looking for. They're looking for nice, tight corners. A bed so tight you can bounce a quarter off of it, which does not sound comfortable.
No.
And you're going to have to get under those covers eventually.
Just kind of excavate a mattress from those sheets.
But Charlie Brown demonstrates it and is terrible at it. And then Snoopy bends the laws of temporal physics, throws a quarter at it, which is bouncing to this day. And then Charlie Brown is like, we're gonna beat these girls at everything. And we're going to get the chinks out of our winter fat. I don't even know if I can say that.
Do I have to bleep that? I don't know.
I don't know.
I can just, you know what I can do is I can just drop the clip in.
Now, we've worked out a schedule of competitive sports to sort of get the chinks out of the winter fat.
Just so nobody thinks that we're throwing slurs around, Charlie Brown.
No, that is what he says.
Yeah, he says we're going to get the chinks out of our winter fat, and basically like, we're all too soft, you porcupines, and that's why we're going to beat the girls at everything.
Yeah.
And then we get to the big swim meet. And we see a grown-up?
A tall child in sailor pants.
Clearly is not a grown-up. The facial features are...
It's got a Charlie Brown-shaped head.
Yeah. Charlie Brown head stuck on a slightly taller body.
They just took Charlie Brown and just kind of stretched him out like a slinky.
In the taffy pulling machine. Like Charlie TV. Not Charlie TV. What's the kid from Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory? Jimmy TV?
Mike TV. Yep.
Yeah, so stretched out kid who is their age but tall, or is an actual teenage person?
Well, they are pretty young. If they were in maybe like second grade, so this might be a fifth grader or something.
Sure. Old enough to have a gun.
Certainly not an adult.
Certainly not.
But he's got a gun, so watch out.
And the big swim race, and the girls are all lined up in perfect formation, and the guys are basically peeing down their own leg. The gun goes off. The girls swim to the dock and back beautifully, and the boys seem to be caught in the Bermuda Triangle.
They end up in the middle of the lake, and they just stay there.
Yeah. Splashing.
Just drowning.
Thrashing. Not waving. Drowning.
Could have been an even shorter summer.
It was a short childhood, Charlie Brown. And it occurs to me that for all of his great leadership skills, Charlie Brown should have asked, hey, does anybody know how to swim?
Yeah, or had like a life ring or something.
Or anything.
Anything.
And this is our first real evidence that the girls are like a military strike force. And the guys are just the worst. We throw to Charlie Brown waiting in line for, lunch. Some strange garbage character who just looks like another Charlie Brown.
Yeah. He's bordered by two Charlie Browns.
Yeah. Like you put one Charlie Brown in a Xerox machine and then just made copies of copies.
If you described Charlie Brown to someone who had never seen Charlie Brown and had them draw it.
Yeah.
That's these two people.
And one of them says, "What's your name, kid?" And he says, "Charlie Brown." And then they're like, "That's a stupid fucking name."
Hey, everybody, look at the guy with the stupid name. Well, and it's like the one sort of moment where, because I feel like everything else in this episode, Charlie Brown has brought on himself.
Squarely
his fault.
He
has spelled his own undoing.
Yep.
And that one was like, okay, so that's the one. I'll give you that one, Charlie yeah. Brown. Everything else you had coming.
Nicole, did you ever have some kind of event where people were like, "I just don't like your face"? Like, immediately, like you walk in and it's just like, nope.
Not really.
Because you're lovable. You're America's best pal.
Well, I also walk into a room and sort of take command of it.
That would not happen to Lucy. No. Somebody was like, "That's a stupid name." Boom, punch in the stomach.
Yeah.
Sock of nickels.
No, I mean, I haven't really walked in. I've certainly been in groups of people where I know I do not fit in with this group
sure,
of people.
Sure. But I wonder if that's a boy thing more than a girl thing.
It might be.
"Hey, kid, what's your name?" Stupid. Like,
yeah.
I don't think girls would do that.
No.
Girls kind of get under your skin.
Whizzing for dominance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Charlie Brown is like, and that's it. Now his day is ruined. Even more so than three of his friends almost drowning. The food they eat is disgusting. How was the food at the camps you went to, Nicole?
I don't remember. I remember it was okay, but I was also a child, so I enjoyed, like, salty spaghetti and Pop-Tarts.
Right.
But I was
together?
Really, well, sure.
Why not?
It was a dessert. But I was really struck, actually, by the detail in the food. You know, you walk in, this is all food I remember eating. It's the pile of corn from a can with a cube of butter, a sliced, you know, square of butter melting on top of it.
Right.
There's the gray oatmeal with a slice of butter melting on top of it. There is, later they have two hot dogs next to a thing of pork and beans that, again, clearly came out of the Vanderkamp's can. I was like, I've eaten every meal that they ate. You know, this is recognizable food to me.
It's not. I don't think I've ever had to eat gray oatmeal.
Color does oatmeal come? I mean, you can get sort of whitish oatmeal.
I think kind of whitey, beige.
Usually by the time I get it, there's so much cinnamon in it that it appears to be brown.
No, I've definitely eaten gray oatmeal.
And the kids hate it, and everybody's like, "This is terrible." Snoopy walks away, and then magically zizzes himself a gourmet meal.
Or that might also be a flight of fancy. What do we know?
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
But it's a good looking spread he's made for
Snoopy's
himself.
Like just the end of Brazil, basically. That's his whole camp experience.
He's got big metal wings. And pie. And then we get to, and then Charlie Brown is like, "All right, well, they absolutely killed us at swimming, so we'll take them on in softball."
Smash cut too. Well, we suck at softball.
We're terrible at that too. Charlie Brown and Peppermint Patty do the grabbing the bat thing to see who goes first.
Yeah.
Which has never made sense to me.
Yeah.
Because there's no randomness at play there.
Because you can't touch each other's, what are the rules? Are they like, can you?
I've never done this in real life.
No, you gotta toss the bat up. The other person catches it, and they might catch it high, they might catch it low. So, wherever they catch it, then hand. So there's a bit of randomness to it.
Oh, okay. I think I interpreted Peppermint Patty throwing it up in the air as her just sort of being jaunty and cavalier. And
no, that's an integral.
Hey, doofus, catch this.
Yeah. Gunk. So they do the old hand grabbing the bat to decide who goes first, and then Peppermint Patty pulls the Eagle Claw maneuver, which is that? A legal move, Nicole? As our camp expert?
No, I would imagine. I mean, the top of it's fair game.
I guess.
Should be.
Especially if you shout Eagle Claw.
Mm-hmm.
Which sounds...
You can get away with anything if you shout Eagle Claw as you're doing it.
Plus, we knew Charlie Brown would not win this competition.
That's true.
Of putting your hands on a baseball bat.
The only person that doesn't know he's not going to win is Charlie Brown. That's kind of the thrust of these things.
Oh, sad. So they go up first. Peppermint Patty is a great manager. Like, I was able to follow her entire strategy, like, you hit it here, and then you bunt, and then we'll all be on base, and just don't hit to the shortstop, because he's the only good one. Let's go. And then, we cut to the boys sitting around a campfire, talking about the absolute thrashing they received. Such graphic blandishment.
not fit for children's eyes.
It's better to just imagine the failure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're sitting around the fire, and Shermie, who's back?
Yeah. And,
with no character at all.
No. He's changed voices again.
Yeah.
Came out the other side of the lump with a different voice.
He's like a shitty the doctor. He just he only regenerates voices. And he's like, we lost 47-1, and that's just because Snoopy was real good and he stole all the bases, and I'm just going to explain this.
I'm just a drip.
Yeah, I'm a drip. I'm going to explain this because nobody wanted to draw yet another baseball game.
We got that all out of our system.
And then there is a genuine moment where I feel like Charlie Brown needs like a hug and some Paxil or something. And he's like, they won, we lost. Must be great to win, but I don't. I feel terrible. That's his catchphrase in this episode. He says it a bunch of times.
He does. And then he goes like, look at the stars. They look like they're having fun. All the lights are on. And we all kind of groaned.
Yeah, that's one of those. And that, again, feels like something from the strip. And that's like one of those like kind of
children. One of you had to be there kind of.
Children say dumb things kind of like thing. But they're all sitting around. They're bemoaning their... Oh, and here's the thing. Charlie Brown is just basically like, I'm gonna go jump in the lake and drown myself. And then it cuts to Snoopy, and it's like, ah, Snoopy's eating a lot of marshmallows! As if somebody from the network was like, you gotta do something. This kid sounds like he's about to Sylvia Plath himself.
And a little camp stove.
Yeah, a little tiny camp set with a pat of butter on his head. That's the law on his dumb little hat.
Yeah, no, Snoopy's whole role is like whenever Charlie Brown sucks at something, they bring in Snoopy to show like, no, it's not impossible. It can be done. Charlie Brown just sucks.
Yeah. And Snoopy is holding a stick with a bunch of branches on it, and it has a marshmallow in every single one, and that does not work.
No.
I have absolutely tried that.
But needn't I remind you, Snoopy's good at everything.
Snoopy's great. Snoopy's good at food. And then the girls show up. Oh, and Linus, there's a whole runner in this where Linus is a scaredy pants about nature, specifically queen snakes, which I looked up and are real, but they are non-venomous. Mm. And I don't know if they chomp you, but Linus is just like, I'm going to get chomped by a queen snake. He's a feeb.
I wrote down that queen snake, just the phrase queen snake, is the commercialism, sort of the word that they just kind of you fill in every gap with.
And it is, I wonder if there's also a fear of the matriarchy in that.
I would think so. I mean, yeah. I thought of Lucy the first time he mentioned Queen Snake. Yep. Mm-hmm.
My favorite Bowie song, by the way. And finally, the girls show up. To rub it in?
I guess.
Or to just hang out and make them feel better. It doesn't seem like they're being malicious.
No. But it doesn't seem like they're being friendly. They're like, let's lead you in a sing-along. No, it'll be fun.
Come on,
guys.
Sing. I don't know. Did either of you ever see the original Dirty Harry?
No.
No, there is a Mystery Science Theater joke based around it. But basically, a guy takes over an entire bus of children, and he's hijacking it. But he makes them all sing, Row, Row, Row Your Boat. So, it's from Manos. The joke is from Manos.
Oh.
Yes. Come on, sing, everybody! Row, row, row your boat! And he's happy and singing, and all the kids on the bus are like, row, row, row. And that's what the boys look like. Because the girls come in and like, let's sing some songs and be happy! And they're all dancing around, and the boys just have this thousand-yard stare, mouthing the words silently.
They've all singed their marshmallows and are just holding these burnt marshmallows on a stick, just seething quietly.
Just seething quietly as the girls have the best time
it
ever.
It looks real fun.
For the girls.
Yeah.
And for the boy, they're just dead inside.
Just quietly tolerating. Just waiting for the sweet release of death.
And it's interesting, too, because forced singing is a huge part of childhood and a very large part of summer camp.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and with no adults around, it makes sense that the girls would take on this role.
My only, like, camp experience is Bible camp, which is not a sleepaway kind of thing, but it is entirely forced singing.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But the girls enjoy their singing, and the boys look like they're being held at gunpoint, because they have suffered great indignities. And then the next morning, we see, is this where we see the comparative roll call bit?
I think so.
Where the girls are like...
I feel like we see that sequence like 3 or 4 times.
God damn it, we blandish this and we are going to use this over and over again.
We blandish conservatively.
Yes. We see another point counterpoint where the girls are fantastic at roll call. And Peppermint Patty is like, summer camp is the closest thing I can get to being in the infantry. So I have to believe that Peppermint Patty, and I feel like this makes sense, is some sort of army brat.
I think so.
Although she does not have a dad, that is a that's an actual thing for. I think it's like a Father's Day strip in the strip where Charlie Brown is talking about his dad and says, "What are you doing for Father's Day?" She says, "I don't have a father." And then Charlie Brown says, "I'm going to go home and paint my tongue black."
Oh, okay.
One of those one of those darker moments that don't quite make it into the specials, but. I could absolutely say maybe her father died in Korea or something, maybe?
I think that would check out with, yeah, the chronology of the strip. She might also have, like, grandparents in the military or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the military up in, I feel like we were the first group of kids, even though there's a bit of time between me and both of you, that we didn't necessarily grow up with any war or draft. We didn't have a ton of military culture growing up.
No, besides the continuous war that's been going on for the past 20 years.
Yes, but as children, what I mean is, like, Vietnam was pretty much all over but the shouting when I was a kid. And I think when you two were growing up in the 80s, there were, like, the Falklands.
Sure, and the first Gulf War wasn't until, like, 89, 90.
Yeah, that was within my lifetime.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but no draft and certainly no... No focusing on military culture in childhood. Whereas I feel like we look at this camp, this 1969 camp, and it seems to be junior army.
Sure.
Keep your beds nice and tight. Everybody march. There is a lot of marching. There's a lot of roll call. There's a lot of, it all feels vaguely fascistic.
Yeah. That is a word.
I guess.
Yeah. And they had little flags that say boys and girls, like real. Like, let's separate the gender.
Because the camp doesn't have a name.
Camp Gender Binary, yeah.
Well, you know, you have to have kids march, though, especially if you're in an outdoor setting. Because otherwise, they're going to run away. To get kids to stand on the line, you got to go left, right, left. And all the kids are like, I'm doing something fun. Yeah.
And the girls are very into that. Mm-hmm. The boys.
They're great at it.
Yeah, not so much.
No.
The boys.
Boys can't even get through a door. I can't stress this
enough. We can't stress it. The girls march into mess hall single file, and the boys, considering how bad the food is, and they have this knowledge now, they are still punching each other in the dick to try and get into mess hall.
Just this beaver dam made out of bodies.
They try the oatmeal. It seems to climb up Linus's hand. Like it's the Venom costume. Like, it's just going to take over his entire body.
And good riddance.
And Snoopy's like, this is terrible, and he goes and makes pancakes. And that's it. When we throw to Snoopy, he's never doing anything funny. It's just like, a dog's making pancakes.
None of this suffering applies to Snoopy.
Ain't that something? Oh, they go on a nature hike where nothing in particular happens. No. Peppermint Patty is like, hey, Chuck, I would have let you win, but I didn't. Which is like, cool story, Peppermint Patty.
Oh, and then she's like, oh, you have a bee on you or something. And he's, what is...
Oh, there's a bug on you. And Charlie Brown, see eye to eye on this, is like, that's the one thing I hate about nature is bugs. And I have said before, I would gladly take 10 years off of my life to never see an insect again.
Right.
I hate them. They are disgusting. They're tiny aliens. They're stealing our souls. Mm-hmm. Also chemtrails. So Peppermint Patty basically just rubs Chuck's face in shit.
Yeah.
And then a bee attacks Violet, and Linus takes it down with his blanket.
I wrote down in my notes, asshole blanket gymnastics.
Yes. And before he can even be thanked, he compares himself to Robin Hood. Because as we all know, Robin Hood stole from the rich and murdered bees. That's what we all know him for. And like, he's just all of these children are insufferable.
Yeah. The boys seem to be united by a shared set, like, delusional sense of grandeur.
Yeah. Although this is the only point in the special where a boy does something competently.
Yeah.
Killing that bee. And then we get a little of Lucy's, and this was used a lot in the strips, the song from You're a Good Man, The Little Known Facts, where Lucy just sort of pulls stuff out of her butt and presents it as truth.
Yeah.
And identifies a potato chip as a butterfly.
And it seemed like she had Linus's sort of pinhead voice from a couple specials previous. I don't know why they decided, you know, Lucy's going to have, like, a slight lisp and just tell us about butterflies for 3,000 years.
It's unusual to see one this time of year. Unless, of course, it flew up from Brazil. I'll bet that's it. They do that sometimes, you know. They fly up from Brazil, and they...
This is no butterfly. This is a potato chip.
Well, I'll be. So it is. I wonder how a potato chip got all the way up here from Brazil.
And she doubles down, too. That's the best part.
She trumps it.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, that's a potato chip. And she's like, well, I guess this potato chip came here all the way from Brazil. And she punches everybody in the face. But it's the only time that a boy is seen doing something right and a girl is seen being wrong. But even in her wrongness, Lucy's like, fuck you, I'm still right. And that's 4 hours of the episode. And then somebody's like, there's a canoe race! And Charlie Brown's like, this is it! If I win this canoe race, then everybody will forget how terrible I am. Hops in a canoe, paddle, 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 exhausted, Snoopy does some dumb shit, and then, haha, he's only 4 feet away from the duck.
Yeah, Shermie got to break that news to him, which I enjoyed. Good on you, Shermie.
It's nice to see him do something.
Yeah, I'm glad he's not an inside a lump of meat anymore. Glad he survived.
But, and we never see any of the other canoe race.
No.
Because that would be way too much blandishing.
Right.
Well, it's such a Charlie Brown thing, too. He doesn't even figure out where the other people are.
There's no sign-up sheet or anything.
Nothing.
He's just like, you know what, I'm just going to paddle my canoe.
Somewhere in America, there is a canoe race happening.
No, I'm Charlie Brown. I meant on television. No, yeah, where are you going?
We're all watching the wide world of canoe racing. And then they're all sitting around, just feeling, the boys are all sitting around their dumb little cabin, feeling thoroughly defeated. And Charlie Brown's like, we got to do something to beat the girls. And show...
Do you, though, Charlie Brown?
Must you? You failed at absolutely everything. And then we see Snoopy casually arm wrestling with Schroeder, I think?
Probably.
Break Schroeder's arm clean in half.
Crack.
And then Charlie Brown's like, that's it. Why didn't I think of that before? We'll have a wrist wrestling tournament with the girls.
I propose that Charlie Brown could have sent Snoopy into any of the previous competitions.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be wrist wrestling. Just like, that's it. We'll send Snoopy to the canoe race.
Right. Do we know if wrist wrestling is in any way, shape, or form different than arm wrestling?
It sounds like it could be much more harmful to your wrist.
It certainly does. That is like the last part of my... Molly is now trying out her wrist.
I'm just trying to imagine, like, how could you configure two people's arms, like, you know, symmetrically? That I guess, like, maybe you have to push somebody's hand over? Like, how...
But that's not what it looks like. It just looks like arm wrestling.
Yeah, because arm wrestling, you're not supposed to move your wrist. That's kind of the point.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Dumb. So they decide they're going to take on the girls. Snoopy assumes the persona of the masked Marvel, which means Snoopy puts on a mask.
But they already think he's a boy, so that's an unnecessary move.
Only Peppermint Patty thinks he's a boy.
And nobody corrects her?
No, because I think, because every time it happens, and it happens in the last special, at any time that Patty shows up, everyone, she'll always say, like, boy, that boy who walks on all fours and has prehensile ears and a tail.
And poops in the grass.
Poops in the grass. That's one weird kid. And everybody always looks at her like, oh, you're high or something. Nobody wants to wake the sleepwalker.
But it seems like somebody in that audience would have been like, wait a second. That's not a fair representation.
But he puts on a mask and that's in line with, like, sort of the first wave of 1950s and 60s professional wrestling, where people had colorful names and wore masks and things of that nature. So they're gonna paddle across the lake and tell the girls they are taking them on. This requires four of them, Schroeder, Linus, and Charlie Brown and Snoopy, to paddle across to a lake girls, to Camp Girls, where the girls are waiting for them. With one of the stalwarts of any Charlie Brown special, unison talking.
Favorite.
Creepy, creepy unison talking.
Well, because, like, unison talking is a thing that happens in comic strips a lot. Just a speech bubble with several little tails on it. And when it is realized, like, in real time, it's my favorite thing in the world, turns out.
It really is. This weird choral talking. This, like, yeah.
Drift-compatible hatred.
Yes. And they've been, the girls have, when the girls are not, you know, just learning
instead
all
of, like,
skills,
the, I don't know what I've been told, like, while they're marching, they just, like, Charlie Brown, you suck at stuff.
Charlie Brown, you suck at stuff. But they're all like, hey, Charlie Brown, you're a jerk and you're terrible at everything. The boys stumble out of their canoe because, and this is a theory that I've been working on, I think maybe the boys' cabin has a slow gas leak.
Right.
That's the only thing that explains their lack of motor skills, their inability to move.
Let's just do a meat lump impression.
I mean, it also explains how Snoopy's cooking all this food. He, you know, brought in his own stove, hooked it up to the gas line.
That's amazing.
Oh. Well done.
It's, God damn it, Snoopy. You've signed our death warrant yet again. Children are dead because of you.
We thought you were the hero.
We really are asked to, because we follow Charlie Brown and the boys camp through the whole thing, we're really asked to believe that Charlie Brown and his friends are the hero and the girls are the antagonists. And that is, could not be farther from the truth.
Yeah, I'm rooting for the girls all the way through this thing.
They're good at everything. They win fair and square. And they look like they're having a great time doing it.
Absolutely.
So the boys challenge them, you know, get your best person and we'll, you know, we'll have a wrist wrestling championship. And Lucy immediately is like, that's me. I'm the best. Obviously, I'm the best wrist wrestler. And this is all information that we're supposed to have somehow. Like when Charlie Brown says, why didn't I think of that? Wrist wrestling. Because, of course, nobody has made mention of this at all.
Yeah.
So, of course, it wouldn't occur to you. We're all learning this for the first time, that Snoopy is an amazing wrist wrestler. So we're going to do this. We're taking you on. And Lucy agrees. And it's going to take place tomorrow. And then more unison talking where, and we should just play this. We should add this to the episode. The incredible string of anti-Charlie Brown unison talking that happens.
It's amazing.
It is beautiful. Where the girls just...
Just an itemized list of all the things that Charlie Brown sucks at.
Hey, manager! Are you the boys' champion? You better be better at wrist wrestling than you are at swimming or ball playing or canoeing or running or jumping or pillow fighting or sack racing or basketball playing or field hockey or volleyball.
Good grief.
And baseball. And underwater basket weaving. And horseback riding.
Tiny hat wearing.
And metallurgy.
Do you all believe that these are all competitions that have happened at some point during this camp?
If they've resorted to wrist wrestling, I would believe so.
That's a really good point, Nicole, because certainly all we see is a swimming competition and...
And an implied softball
an
game.
An implied softball game. And then what may or may not be a canoe race.
A potentially existing canoe race. Yeah, never proven.
Somewhere on Earth, a canoe race happened. I feel like that would have made for a more interesting special if we could have zipped through all of these losses. But no matter. Snoopy, who is already really good at being a wrist wrestler, they all decide, now you have to train. And we get sort of the Rocky train, or I guess it would be more over the top. The classic Sylvester Stallone wrist wrestling movie. Snoopy is forced to jump up and down in place and drink glass after glass of Linus's mysterious electrolyte solution.
I didn't realize upon first watch that Linus made that stuff.
Is that what they imply
that he made it?
It belongs to Linus, and it came from him.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. My best guess is that maybe that's what he gets when he squeezes out his blanket.
Yeah. Maybe that's where it's coming. No, I mean...
It's Gatorade.
It's probably Pedialyte is what it is.
Ooh.
Which does not taste good. And
it absolutely does not.
Really
is,
not.
Is
not,
Pedialyte used for sports? Because I know what it's supposed to be used for.
It's supposed to be used for like resuscitating passed out babies.
You have diarrhea, you drink the Pedialyte.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't think it has the powers of Jesus, however. Like I don't think it brings children back to life.
I've been using it wrong then.
I'm a terrible doctor. I'm the worst pediatrician. But anyways, yes, no, it's an electrolyte solution. And this is from the strips. This is, except the strips had a much funnier punchline. There was a whole week dedicated to our team is so bad. Linus has this electrolyte solution like they use in the big sports teams. Because I think Gatorade had just come out.
Okay.
It was developed for, I want to say a Florida college team.
Probably the Florida Gators.
Yeah. Yes. And so, and everybody on the team drinks it and they still lose their game. And it's like, why did this happen? You drank all of the solution. And then it cuts to the kids with distended bellies. And just because, we drank too much, and now we're roly-poly and filled with liquid. That does not happen here. What happens is Snoopy drinks this gross...
I wish that
this,
happened.
This gross liquid that came from Linus in some capacity. And we see him training. And while the boys are while they're training Snoopy, the girls are having the greatest time at summer camp ever.
It's just my favorite. Just my favorite thing. I want like little lenticular slides of every little shot in this montage of the girls just being great at camp.
Yeah, they're fantastic. Molly, can you talk us through how the girls are great at camp?
Well, I think that they're catching and chasing butterflies, and they're having a pool party, like on some dock somewhere.
Sunning themselves,
and just, it just looks like a fantastic time.
They're doing arts and crafts. They're doing all of the things that you would expect children to do at camp, except unsupervised, and they're crushing it.
They're great at having fun. I didn't even know you could be good at that.
Yeah. And I made the note when I was watching this, and Molly, I think you made a similar note, like, this is what it's going to look like when the patriarchy falls. Mm-hmm. It's just going to be Molly, you and Nicole, mm-hmm. and your friends running through fields with butterfly nets,
yeah,
making baskets.
I did actually make a note that I want to get Angela Weber of the Double Clicks a very tall flag that says, girls.
Oh.
Yes.
I immediately thought of all of you exactly in those positions, just carrying the flag.
Just marching. Present.
We can't sing that, though, otherwise the Beastie Boys will sue us.
Oh. Yeah.
Well,
when the patriarchy's fallen, it won't matter.
Yeah, I feel like Beastie Boys records are going to be the first things they throw on the fire. We never have to hear a man explain Paul's Boutique again! Yeah. Flame!
Well, I'm referring to an actual thing. They actually sued a company. Do you remember this?
I do remember this, but mm-hmm. that was for commercial purposes.
Yes.
I think if the girls were to, or women were to adopt it as the new theme of the matriarchy, the fuck are the Beastie Boys going to do
Very
about
true.
It?
Yeah, they'd get Knuckle Sandwich from Lucy if they disagreed.
They're a man down anyways.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're fine. rest in peace. We cut back to Snoopy and his training, and I'm going to call first Woodstock. He is arm wrestling, or wrist wrestling rather.
A tiny yellow bird,
who is not quite Woodstock shaped, but is enough Woodstock shaped.
Yeah, it doesn't have any lines.
No.
Just kind of... It's kind of garbage Woodstock is what he is.
Yeah, it's like a first draft Woodstock.
Well, like the little sort of garbage Snoopies in the background of the bus scene.
Yes.
Sort of the same ilk.
I want to go to garbage Snoopy land so bad.
It's called Knott's Berry Farm.
Oh. Take that, Knott's Berry Farm!
Zing.
Fuck you! and then we're at the big match. It's time.
Yeah.
It's time for the big match. It's time for the big wrestling match, which takes place in an amphitheater.
Yeah.
So heavily attended that there are children climbing up trees.
It's basically Coachella.
It is the headliner of the Coachella festival. Yes. It's Lucy comes out and everybody is cheering for her.
Uh-huh.
Everybody just knows that the girls have this.
They have to by now.
Yeah.
Well, has there ever been any sort of movie or television show where boys compete against girls and the boys win? Because in this scenario, it is set up, you know, where the boys are stronger, and then the girls, they have to win, like, structurally.
I think in the scenario you described, Nicole, that the girls would be portrayed as underdogs,
mm-hmm.
whereas in this,
they're crushing it.
They are buffaloing over to the point where I guess we're supposed to be like, well, I hope maybe the boys win, but you really don't.
There's nothing, you have nothing to stand on if you think the boys might turn it around.
Yeah, but I'm not even rooting for them. I'm sort of excited for them to keep failing. And I even made the note, like, the girls are being jerks, but they've earned it. They really, I mean, they are the rightful winners.
Maybe this is why Lucy signed everybody up for camp, is so she could just wipe the floor with them in just the remote woods of wherever the hell they are all summer long.
Camp boys and girls.
Yeah. Let's get them away from the lumps. The lumps can't protect them now.
Yeah.
And let's just demolish them.
And that's what it is.
Yeah.
And the great wrist wrestling competition commences. Lucy comes out. The Masked Marvel comes out. Peppermint Patty's like, it's that kid with the big nose who poops in the grass and eats out of a bowl on all fours. And they look at her like, she's from a different part of town. Let's never explain it
her
to her.
Her dad died. Just don't bring.
Or are they gaslighting her? Like, is everybody like, she seems to think Snoopy's a boy. Let's not tell her.
I think it's a little of both.
Yeah. The great wrist wrestling championship begins. And this is a really well animated sequence.
Almost like too well. Like, it's a little more detailed than I would prefer it to be.
Well, we were watching the episode, and Snoopy was drinking gallons and gallons of electrolyte solution, and Molly was like, how much electrolytes do you lose wrist wrestling? My tongue is literally made of liquor at this point after a week on this boat, and I apologize. They are sweaty. They are disheveled. Lucy looks like she is going to have an aneurysm.
They look like our crumb drawings for a second. It's really astounding.
It is the 60s. Yeah, it is. There is a very underground comics look to it.
Yeah.
And this is also from the strip. They weren't at summer camp, but if you can imagine a week's worth of them making these faces from four panels to four panels. Now, if I remember the strip correctly, we see Snoopy's thoughts, and Snoopy knows that he's going to lose. He knows that he's been had. And so he decides to use Lucy's kryptonite.
Yeah.
Which is a kiss on the face.
Dog germs.
And she cries, foul, foul. This is wrong. Boo. Attica, Attica. She's very upset. And then we fade to black. And we assume that the boys lost that as well.
But Lucy also could have murdered everybody. Like, that could be how that turned out.
But it is a flashback where everybody's alive at the beginning.
That's true.
So the boys lose yet again. Because Snoopy, for one reason or another...
Just cheated. Yeah.
Just kissed her on the nose like a jerk. And then went and had a spectacular dinner at his illicit camp stove, which is robbing all of the boys of their very breath. The end. Nope. There's still 5 minutes left in the episode. We come back to present day, where Charlie Brown turns in his essay and it's only 13 words.
Somehow,
even though he's written a lot more than that.
He's written like 25 words at this point. Yeah. He wrote two sentences.
Which he must have looked at and torn up because he must have looked at it and been like, oh, this reads like a suicide note. This is terrible. I can't turn this in good faith. And his teacher gives him crap about that. And he's basically like, well, I didn't want to go into detail because it was all awful.
And he's right.
He learned nothing. Absolutely nothing. And this is a thing we keep coming back to, and it is I would not call these the most realistic depictions of childhood, but I think when you see things about summer camp, you always get this like thing at the end, like, and then the underdogs come from behind. And the guy gets the girl, and there's a big party around the bonfire. And in this, nothing. The girls win yet again. The boys learn nothing. There's no summing up where Charlie Brown is like, you know what? Maybe girls are better than boys. Or maybe I should not be in leadership positions. Or anything. What should Charlie Brown take away from his summer?
Well, I kind of feel like if Charlie Brown did have a moment of reckoning where he went, you know what? Maybe girls are adequate, then we wouldn't have any more of these specials. You know, if Charlie Brown learned from all these trials, eventually he'd be like a well-rounded, compassionate person. And that's not conducive to...
Nope, the only thing well-rounded is his big dumb head.
Zing!
Ziz! Take that, Charlie Brown! Fuck you! Fuck you, Knott's Berry Farms! Fuck you, two-thirds of the Beastie Boys!
Fuck Pedialyte!
Fuck Pedialyte! We are all on notice!
These are like negative sponsorships. We owe them money now.
But Squarespace is probably great.
And Audible. Sure.
Audible. Fantastic.
MeUndies. Who cares?
Club W.
What's Club W?
Oh, have you not been listening to the podcast or shilling for Club W?
It's like Loot Crate, but for wine, I think, basically. Yeah.
You put in the types of tastes you like to taste in your mouth, and then it sends you wines based on those tastes. I've gone through the checklist, you know, every step you can before actually giving them money.
Of course.
It's an extensive checklist of, do you like the taste of dirt? Do you like the taste of coffee?
And they're all these things.
Yeah.
So it's like a dating profile, only the aim is to fall in love with wine.
Well, they send you little cards, like, here's, you know, where your wine comes from, and here's what you can pair it with. And some of the food pairings are like, they get us. It's like, oh, this would pair nicely with like some Pop-Tarts and Star Wars. Like, like, well, yep, I can pretend I'm going to cook tilapia, but I'm not. Well done, Club W.
the other half of a Twix bar that I've been saving since the Clinton administration in my couch.
Pairs well with an expired bag of fruit snacks.
Charlie Brown. So this is the big bang up ending. Mm-hmm. This is it. We're back in the present day. What'd you get on your essay, Linus? I got an A. What'd you get, Charlie Brown? I got a C-, which seems very generous on that meatloaf teacher's part.
Yeah.
If he was only...
He didn't even get 10% of the requirement.
He was only able to get 13/500ths of the assignment done.
You know, if she was grading on a rubric, though, I mean, and she gave, like, 1 point for spelling, 1 point for grammar, 1 point for length, I could see eventually how this would come. If he spelled every word correctly,
yeah,
he could still get
it. Style.
Yeah,
that's true. Mm-hmm. And Charlie Brown's like, I got a C- and I'm terrible. And then Linus says, as if the writers of the episode were writing this in real time, like just writing things on a piece
of paper.
Some
kind of like game jam, but for writing television specials.
Yes, and throwing it to the blandishing in one of those pneumatic tubes, like, take it away, blandishers! And then Linus says, for literally no reason whatsoever, except that it's the title, it was a short summer, Charlie Brown. Which is... such a, like a shitty term paper writing assignment, kind of, where it's like, oh, I forgot to include the title.
Throughout history, people have been having summer.
Webster's defined summer.
Frederick Douglass once said about summer.
Yeah. You know, I did that whole Webster's thing once. I thought I was the first person to thought of it. I was so embarrassed.
What if you were? There's a good shot.
We could probably check some archive somewhere.
Yes. Do you think that when Webster had to give a speech, he would start by saying, I define this word as... And he pushes up his glasses.
It's so much more... I mean, today it's like dictionary.com defines...
Urban Dictionary defines...
No. They, as before, I don't know. And then, so... Lion's like, it was a short summer. And Charlie Brown's like, and it's going to be a long winter. And then just a walk cycle of them just walking to nowhere. And as Nicole pointed out, the very earth disappears from behind them.
No, in a single, like, frame, all the background goes away.
Yeah. It's a graphic vanishment. And that's it for this. You know what, Molly? I went into this recording thinking, this episode wasn't bad. This was fucking terrible.
Yeah, we dragged it through the dirt. Without question.
I genuinely cannot wait for you to see He's Your Dog, Charlie Brown, however.
I'm probably going
to
watch it on the plane.
Because it is such a colossal piece of crap that it makes this actually look... At least there's, like, movement and things happening. But so that brings us to the end of what is not a very good episode, and it is the end of the 1960s episodes. So if we look at the track of these, I believe, six episodes, it more and more we get the realization that Charlie Brown Christmas was lightning in a bottle.
Truly.
As far as how touching it is, how truthful it is, how sweet it is.
It's well paced.
Yep. What we sort of decided was sort of glacially paced when we first watched it. In comparison to this, it's like a taut thriller. Like, it really is. Like, there's no wasted anything in it. And in these ensuing specials, they're a little crass. They're very cynical.
I mean, I think the Christmas special is cynical. I think that the Charlie Brown universe is kind of held together by cynicism.
It's a different... You're absolutely right. Go on.
I do wonder if we feel... Because I don't think that... I think the Christmas special is well executed, but I wonder if it's because it's born such, like, deep grooves in our brain.
Yeah.
That we just know those paces so well. You know, like how when you know an album from top to bottom, when one song finishes, you know how the next song is going to start. And that's kind of how I feel about that special. And I wonder if for some reason I had seen Charlie Brown All-Stars 85 times.
If you had grown the same sort of affection
for it? Would I feel like, oh, well, you know, it clips along pretty well because I would be able to anticipate everything as it's coming.
Yeah, but there's no, in these, with the exception of Great Pumpkin, there's no there. There's none of the sweetness of the strip. There's none of the philosophical moments of the strip. It's just... people being, and you're right, Molly, it is a cynical universe, but at least in Charlie Brown Christmas, it's tinged with a little sweetness.
Well, and everybody, these specials seem to go out of their way to give everybody a moment, you know, that like, well, Sally should have some line if she's not going to camp. And in the Christmas special, most of those moments are kind of, they're not necessarily sweet, but like Shermie's little moment is very potent, and we really get a good impression of Shermie from his like one line.
Yeah.
And a lot of times when garbage characters speak, in these specials, it's like, well, that guy's a jerk too.
Yeah.
They just needed someone to say that line. And it doesn't tell, it doesn't reveal anything, and it doesn't really bring you closer to the universe.
Yeah. It's not a good entry point.
No, certainly not.
No. Although, the character, I will say this, for the most part, the main characters are all on model.
Yeah.
They're, as opposed to other episodes where Linus is just basically like another garbage character.
I'm looking forward to some episode somewhere where Schroeder gets a line that is not, I'm pretentious and I play the piano, because that's pretty much all he ever says in some form or another.
But Pigpen is filthy. Linus is kind of a drip and an egghead.
Yeah.
Lucy is the all-seeing, all-knowing ruler of everything.
Yeah. Peppermint Patty's a jock and Violet's a yes man. And
yeah.
It's worth noting, you know, for all they care or don't care about the details, when they do their little essays and the words appear above them, Lucy misspells softball because she puts a hyphen in between soft and ball. And Linus spells softball the correct way, which is really kind of clever.
Boom.
Boom. And also,
boys one, girls 10,000.
And Charlie Brown's penmanship is really very nice, and that's not quite canon.
Pencilship. You can actually hear... I'm a nerd. You can
is
hear...
pencilship the word?
You can hear... Well... Charlie Brown in the comics, cannot use a pen. Like, canonically, is terrible.
Right.
Because these are like old school fountain pens.
Yeah.
That if you like press down too hard, there's a giant splotch of ink everywhere. Which is why instead of having a pen pal,
he had a pencil pal. So it's not that his handwriting is bad, it's just that he sucks at fountain pens.
Yes.
Okay.
Which we saw in Charlie Brown All Stars.
Yeah, I remember.
When he's suicide notes. Yes. When he's
in front of Mr. Hennessy.
One of his many suicide notes. Is this an episode of Charlie Brown against the universe or Charlie Brown versus Charlie Brown? Nicole.
I mean, he brings it all on himself. He says boys are stronger. He sets up all these competitions. And he continues to set up the competitions even after he is repeatedly and thoroughly trounced.
I agree. And it wasn't his choice to go to camp, but
nope.
He could have made the best of it. The girls
mm-hmm.
certainly did.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't have to set up all these, like, it's the same problem in All Stars. Like, he had been, he was 1,000 failures deep into the season and was like, no, next time it's going to be fine. Like, no, try. I mean, at least to his credit in this one, he tried different things.
Yes. He did not put himself in charge.
He was elected by people we didn't see, who did not
appear to be
the
election.
Children in the
room. He might have just stuffed the box.
He might have stuffed the box, or Lucy put him in charge.
Fair. Oh.
Because she knew that would basically sign her ticket to Winterville.
I mean, to Charlie Brown's credit, you know, if he didn't keep trying, at this point he's like 8. What would he say? Charlie Brown, would you like to be in the canoe race? No. I would be terrible at that. Charlie Brown, do you like to play softball? No, I am terrible at that. I mean, that's a pretty sad
That's kind
life.
Of his hammer to you, really.
That's how I became a writer. I guess I can put words together on a piece of paper okay.
If I freelance, I can't get fired.
Yes,
there,
exactly.
There is a
process of elimination throughout childhood and young adulthood where you figure out what you're good at. And Charlie Brown thinks he's good at everything?
He thinks that he will become good at everything. Like, he'll have a breakthrough, and this thing that he's been trying, he will finally succeed at. And there's sort of... I feel like my failure wall is pretty close to my starting point.
Yeah.
I try something once, and it doesn't work, and I hit the failure wall, and I go, well, never again. And Charlie Brown's failure wall is way the fuck away.
It is the green monster of failure wall.
It's like that hallway from Time Bandits. It's just the wall keeps getting further and further away.
Yes. So that, with the exception of the jerk garbage Xerox Charlie Brown character saying he has a stupid name, everything else in this episode is his own goddamn fault.
Yeah, I think even the girls coming over and, you know, singing songs to him while he's steeping in his own failure and talking about stars. Like, he could have made the better of that.
He could have sung along.
He could have been a good sport.
He could have been a good sport. But instead, they just sat there dead-eyed, staring into the middle distance.
Poor mouthing, Charlie Brown.
Mouthing to words, songs from wars they'll never have to fight.
Because they'll never grow up.
Is there anything in this episode that counters our meat lump theory, which is to say, is there anything in this episode that points evidence to the contrary that a horrific industrial accident rendered everybody above a certain age into gelatinous, sentient slabs of meat?
They do mention a parent figure.
Yep.
Charlie Brown and Sally's mom. And there is a teacher who we don't see and who speaks in trombone. And the thing that was interesting to me about this special in relation to meat lump theory is the taller child. That there's some stage in this culture between whatever age Charlie Brown is and lump.
Right.
There's someone in the middle of that Venn diagram. And he's got a gun.
But he seems very chipper.
Yeah. He's good at his job. He's got a snappy little uniform.
But he's probably only a fifth grader.
I mean, yeah, like middle schooler at tops.
Yeah. There is also the theory that this is somewhere on the outskirts of town where people are just normal. But there are no other adults at this camp, certainly.
Because there were no lifeguards during the swim meet. What's going on there?
Nope, just unsupervised children, a lake, and a gun.
And some children drowning.
Yes, exactly.
And a tall child with a gun.
Good old camp boys and girls. As we said, not a good entry point at all, although everybody acts like them. So if you had to show this to somebody, I think they would at least walk away and go, Charlie Brown's a loser, Lucy's bossy, Linus is...
What is our criterion for a good entry point? Because there's on the one hand, I feel like if you started with this one, all the other ones would seem real shiny by comparison.
Not he's your dog. Jesus,
no.
I can't. That's like this. It's like a Saw movie. Can't wait for you to see it.
Oh my God.
That's a good question. I think it would be something. The ideal entry point would be something that introduced the characters in a clear and concise way, but also the general feel of the strip, which I find to be a little sad, a little philosophical, vaguely religious.
Yeah.
These sort of things.
A lot of little character moments.
Yeah. So this one does an okay job on the character end of things, but it just sort of takes place in a garbage universe.
I don't think it would make someone who was unfamiliar with the Peanuts universe want to watch more.
No.
It certainly doesn't whet the appetite.
No.
No. The two real winners from this season and from the 60s episodes are clearly Great Pumpkin and Charlie Brown Christmas.
I feel like Charlie Brown Christmas is kind of the standard entry point.
Yeah.
For these. What have we learned?
I learned that all camp food has a giant slab of butter put on it. No matter what. Nicole, what did you learn?
I guess I learned that... I don't know. When Molly and I were watching it, I said at one point, oh, I know what's going to happen. And that's sort of how I felt like throughout the whole thing. Maybe I didn't know the details, but I knew from the minute Charlie Brown said, oh, boys are stronger, you know everything that's going to happen.
He's going to get a trouncing.
Yes. Yeah. I don't know. I did learn that I was even more like Lucy than I expected.
Oh, how so?
That's interesting.
I mean, the very night we watched this, I had arranged a dinner for 17 people.
That's true.
That's true.
And as I've listened to your other discussions, you're like, okay, obsessed with money, obsessed with clothing, obsessed with spouting random trivia, and enjoys telling other people what to do. Check on all of those.
But you're not crabby.
No.
Do you own a pair of saddle shoes?
I did as a child, but that was because I wanted to be like Bert, my favorite Muppet.
I'll take things that don't surprise me for 200.
You are the ideal guest for this podcast. In so many ways.
Molly, what did you learn?
I learned that I really want a very tall flag that says girls on it.
I'm Josh Kagan.
And I'm Molly Lewis.
And I'm Nicole Deeker.
And this has been Peanuts Gallery.
Thanks for listening. Hello. I'm Molly Lewis. You may know me from the Peanuts Gallery, a podcast that you're listening to right now. I got a couple quick housekeeping announcements before I let you go, and normally I don't like to do this, but these things are important. Like Josh said, we are to the end of the 1960s when it comes to Peanuts animated television specials, which means that the Peanuts Gallery, this podcast, is nearly to the end of its first season. Now, we've decided to release this podcast in seasons so that we can group the episodes by decade and then punctuate these seasons with movies. And so we've been trying to release on kind of a monthly schedule, but we're going to take a month off, and then we're going to drop A Boy Named Charlie Brown, which is a feature presentation, sometime in July. And then we're going to take a little break. That's kind of why we like to break up into seasons. And then in the fall, we'll start season 2. And so now is a great time to tell your friends to catch up. If they don't understand your meat lump jokes, and who does really, tell them to find us on iTunes. We're on iTunes now. I'm not quite sure how that happened, but I imagine I had something to do with it. We tried to be as thorough as possible in our analysis, but if there's anything you feel we left out, please tell us at ask.fm/peanutsgallery or tweet at us at peanutspodcast. And finally, Josh and I wrote a musical a couple years ago called Thanksgiving vs. Christmas, which doesn't have anything to do with the Peanuts, but it kind of does because it was very much modeled off of these holiday specials and born out of our shared love of these Peanuts holiday specials. It's got music. It's got all our friends in it. The Double Clicks, Marion Call, the Mongrel Jews, Nicole Deaker, who was in this episode. It's got Kevin Murphy from Mystery Science Theater who plays Santa Claus. I'm not quite sure how we landed him, but he agreed to do it, and so we made him a costume and he did it. It's great. So you don't have to buy it. We just listen to it at mollylewis.bandcamp.com. Really hard sell there, Molly. Yeah, I know, Molly. We really enjoyed making it, and we're really, really proud of it. And we're proud of this podcast, and we thank you so much for listening and going on this bizarre meat lumpy journey with us. And without any further ado, take it away, you blockhead.
We'll start with a little competition with the girls across the lake. We're going to indulge in a little swimming race with them. And I don't want you guys to show them up too badly. Swim steady, but don't make them look too bad. After all, boys are stronger.
Questions, comments, concerns? Tweet them at us at peanutspodcast.
You blockheads.